This week's parsha is Parshas Bamidbar. Before I begin, I just want to dedicate tonight's class in memory of our dear friend who passed away last week, Barry Cohn, Baruch Menashe ben Henoch. As everybody who is here or who is watching or listening knows, the fact that this class has been recorded, audio and video, and distributed to a number of people over the years is all to his credit. And we're going to really miss him terribly. And again, tonight's shiur should be L'zeich HaNishmas Baruch Menashe Ben Henoch. Okay, page 726, Parshas Bamidbar. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Midbar Sinai Boyel Moyed. Hashem spoke to Moshe in the Sinai Desert, in the Oyel Moyed, in the Tabernacle, in the Mishkan. Be'echad l'chodesh hasheni, on the first day of the second month, b'ashana hashenis, in the second year, b'tzeisam me'eretz Mitzrayim, of their going out from the land of Egypt, le'mar saying, su'u esreish kol hadas b'nei Yisrael, count the heads, count the number of all the assembly of the children of Israel, mishpachaisam l'beis avaisam, according to their families, according to the house of their fathers, b'mispar shemais, a number or accounting of names, called Zachar L'Gulgulaysam, every male L'Gulgulaysam by a head count, which Rashi says means that each person gives a half shekel to be counted by. Okay, so Rashi, the first Rashi, Pasuk Aleph, Rashi says, because the Jewish people are beloved before him, Mayna Isam Kol Shah. We find that Hashem counts them often. Kshiyatzim and Mitzrayim manan. When they left Egypt, he counted them. Ukshinaflu be'egel, and when many of them died due to the sin of the golden calf, manan, he counted them. Leida minyan hanesarim, to know how many of them are left. Ukshabal ha'ashrish chinasay aleihem, and now when he came to rest his divine presence in their midst, manan, again he counted them. And Rashi concludes, Ve'echad b'Nisan ukam ha'mishkan, the Mishkan was erected on the first day of Nisan, u'be'echad b'Iyar manam, and he counted them on the first day of Iyar. So Rashi says that counting the Jewish people is a sign or an expression of Hashem's love for them. You know, when you have things that you like, you count them because you want to see how much you have. And he does this at special occasions. And one of those occasions are right now, because now is the time that he's coming to rest his divine presence in their midst. And as Rashi points out, the Pasuk says, this command to count the Jewish people took place on the first day of the second month, which is, the second month is Iyar. And Rashi tells us, the Mishkan was erected on the first of Nisan, and in Iyar, the first of Iyar, is when he counted them. Now Rashi says that the reason now Hashem is counting the Jewish people is because now he's resting his divine presence in their midst. He's resting his Shekhinah in their midst. So the obvious question is that if, as Rashi says, that he rests his Shekhinah, that the Mishkan was erected on the first of Nisan, and that was when Hashem rested his Shekhinah in the Mishkan, why is he counting them a month later? He should be counting them right away. And the answer that is given by the Sifsei Chachamim and given by the Kli Yakar is based on an interesting halacha. There's a halacha that says, you know, a person has the ability to make a neder, which means I can take upon myself, which we translate as a vow. But in essence, a neder is when I take something that is essentially permissible and I say I cannot benefit from it. I create my own prohibition that I cannot have a benefit from whatever I decide should be forbidden for me to benefit from. If I decide I'm going to forbid myself to benefit from a person, I can do that too. So if Sa'alokha is, if someone says that I will not have any benefit from the inhabitants of a specific city, okay, a person makes a vow that he's not going to have benefit from anybody who lives in the city. So you can make such a vow. But the halacha is that only people who have lived for 30 days in that city does the vow apply to. If you're not there for 30 days yet, you're not considered an inhabitant of the city. until 30 days, it's almost like you haven't really committed to staying there. And therefore, anybody who's been there for 30 days is considered an inhabitant of the city. You made a vow, you made a neder not to benefit from any of you from the city. That person is included. But the person who's in the city, but not there for 30 days yet, he's not yet settled there. He's not considered a full inhabitant of the city yet. And therefore, the prohibition doesn't apply to him. So therefore, I say that the Sifsei Chacham and the Kli Yakar say that Hashem rested his Shechina on the 1st of Nisan. But Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't going to count them in honor, so to speak, or because of Hashem resting his divine presence amongst the Jewish people, because he wanted to wait for a month. After a month, that shows that Hashem has really decided that he is settling himself amongst the Jewish people in the Mishkan. When that happens, that's what Moshe said. Okay, now we count.
Well, except here, Hashem told him to.
Good, sorry, Hashem told him to do that way. Because basically, it follows the same idea. The basic, that if the reason you're counting is because of the fact that if the point of counting is because now is the time that Hashem says, I'm resting my divine presence, well, he hasn't, so to speak, decided to permanently or to seriously rest his divine presence amongst the Jewish people until they see that he's done it for 30 days. It's interesting because it seems like that first 30-day period, if I'm understanding it correctly, is kind of, am I going to stay here, not stay here? And to some degree, that applied by the Rabbi Nishalayim. You know, the first 30 days were those first 30 days where things aren't definite yet. It takes the first 30 days, even in this kind of circumstance where Hashem told him to build the Mishkan and he's promised to rest his divine presence in the Mishkan, you still need those first 30 days to know that it's going to stay this way, even in regard to this. It's an interesting comparison. Now, I want to share with you now a thought. So Rashi says the point of counting is it's an expression of love. I have often shared with you thoughts from this sefer called Likutim Misefer Shem Yishmuel. Shem Yishmuel was a famous Chassidus Rebbe, and he wrote a very, very deep commentary on Chumash known as Shem Yishmuel. And this basically is a book in English. It's actually a translation from a Hebrew book where it's selections from the Shem Yishmuel on the Parsha. And the Shem Yishmuel talks about the fact, he's giving a insight into the point of counting, and he really begins a discussion by asking the fact that along throughout the whole Parsha there's a lot of counting going on. You know, they're counted, first the whole Jewish people are counted as a Jewish people. And then they're divided up amongst flags, and they're counted again. Now, what is it about all this counting? Why is it happening so many times? So he starts with a very interesting concept from the Zohar. Now, these concepts I'm going to share with you, I can't tell you I fully understand or can fully explain, but I do think we can take out, you know, appreciate some of the concepts here. So the Zohar says that rather God spoke to Yisrael in the desert, right? Hashem spoke to Moshe, Bamidbar Sinai in the desert, a harsh wilderness. This is an English translation. A wilderness which was more inhospitable than any other in the world. Why did he take Yisrael there? Because at the moment when Yisrael left Egypt and their numbers reached the complete figure of 600,000, the holy kingdom was strengthened, which affected everything. There's something about the number 600,000. There's something about that number. And then, once the Jewish people hit that number, now everything can be affected. And then the wicked kingdom was subjugated. And God brought out Israel to traverse the harsh desert, which is the place and territory of the wicked Samael. Samael is another name for the Yetzer Hara, for the Satan, for the power of evil. In order to break his strength and to sever his head and to subjugate him so he should no longer rule. So the Zohar is telling us a concept that when the Rebbeinu Shem took the Jewish people out of Egypt and they hit that number of 600,000, he took them through the desert because the desert was to be, so to speak, was supposed to be physically conquered. They were supposed to go through the desert. But their being in the desert was also a way of conquering the power of Samal, the power of evil. You know, right on Yom Kippur, the Seir La'azazel, right? They take a goat and they throw it off a cliff into the desert. The Ramban says that's a gift to Samuel. There's something about the desert, the desolation of the desert, the emptiness, destruction of the desert, that in a spiritual sense, it's a place of evil. It's a place where Samuel rests. The Jewish people going through the desert was, by them being in the desert, living in the desert, serving Hashem in the desert, accepting the Torah in the desert, their being in the desert was about conquering the power of evil. That's what it was about. And let me just read you how they have it here. The desert was a place to conquer both physically and spiritually. It represented the forces of evil. And when Klal Yisrael ventured into its vast tracts of wasteland, waving God's banner, their aim was to overpower these forces and subjugate them to good. It wasn't just traveling through a desert. It was meant to subjugate the powers of evil that exist, that the desert represents. Now, you know, when we talk about these kinds of concepts about, you know, the Jewish people went through the desert and they subjugated evil. So what does that mean? They never do anything wrong again? We know that they sinned in the golden calf of the desert, and we know that they sinned further. But what it means is something, what I understand, again, not something that's so easy to comprehend on a simple level, but the Derech Hashem has a similar concept when it comes to explaining why every day we have a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim.
We have mitzvah for what?
The mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim every day. Okay. And I'm reading to you from the English translation. The reason why this, referring to the exodus from Egypt, the reason why this must be recalled daily is because the exodus was the primary rectification of Israel, whose influence remained with us forever. The reason behind this ultimately stems from Adam's sin. When he transgressed, all mankind was degraded, as discussed in the first section. Evil became so strong in man that there was no opportunity for the good to gain any strength. Even though Abraham was selected so that his children should be set apart from all nations, as the people dedicated to God, there was still no opportunity for them to strengthen themselves and establish themselves as a nation. Because of the initial pollution and evil that still lacked in them, they could not gain possession of their appropriate crown. Zerach Hashem says that when Adam Arishan ate from the tree of knowledge, he basically degraded himself. He degraded the human being. The great human being created by God was essentially degraded through eating from the tree of knowledge. And because of that degradation, no one was able to really attain what he calls the crown. No one was really able to attain that potential of perfection, of really becoming close to one with Hashem. And even though Avraham accomplished so much and he was chosen, that he and his descendants should eventually reach that level, but they couldn't reach that level, as is, because of that degradation that came to man through the sin of Adam Arishan.
Except we assume that the first several generations have the highest level. Well, like Abraham and the next couple of generations.
Right.
But
not as a nation.
Okay.
That's his point. There is something about a nation that has the potential for that. That fits into that, correct. Now, it was for this reason that Israel had to be exiled and subjugated in Egypt. During this period, they were refined and purified like gold in a smelter. When the proper time came, God increased his influence and illumination over the Jews, repelling the evil and eliminating it from them.
Strong words.
He then elevated them from their degraded state and lifted them up to him. They were thus permanently redeemed from evil were subsequently able to exist as a perfect nation attached to God and ennobled by Him. This was a permanent rectification, and all the good that we attain is a result of it. We are therefore commanded to remember it and recite it verbally each day. The rectification of the Exodus is then strengthened, its light enhanced, and its benefit constantly transmitted to us. Now, you know, hard to explain each principle that he's saying, but in a general way, the point is that through Yetzias Mitzrayim, we were now elevated from the grips of evil that basically we were subjugated to before. The degradation that was part of us from Adam Rishon sin meant that evil had a certain hold on us that would not allow us as a nation to become one with Hashem. Yetzias Mitzrayim purified us and allowed us to be raised up, elevated out of that. And now to become a people that have the potential now to attain that perfection and to become connected with Hashem. Now, that doesn't mean we don't sin anymore. We still sin. We still have a Yetzirah. But what it does mean is, though, that now we have a certain potential and ability to elevate ourselves in a certain way that evil doesn't have that control on us that stops it from happening. We still can be influenced. We can still sink. We can still fall. But we don't, but we've now been elevated. Essentially, we've been elevated to a higher state that allows us now to rise to the highest levels of connection to with Hashem. That's what Yetzias Mitzrayim did. And I would suggest humbly that this is what the Shem Shmuel also means when the Jewish people went into the desert, and the traveling through the desert was meant to conquer the powers of evil that are represented in the desert. It doesn't mean you don't sin anymore. They can still sin, as we know. But the point is that this was another step of conquering evil in a way that the Jewish people now have the ability to elevate themselves to Hashem in the highest level as a nation. So however that's done, however they did that in the desert, by listening to Hashem's word, by doing the will of Hashem in the desert, by doing it amongst all these forces, that subjugated those forces, that humbled those forces, so that now they'd be able to elevate themselves and the world to the highest level. But the Shem Yishmuel is saying that going through the desert, as the Zohar says, was a means of subjugating evil, which the desert represents. So the Shem Yishmuel continues that this battle against the forces of evil was clearly a very tough test. And as such, they have to be appropriately armed. You know, you're going to go through this kind of a challenge. It's a battle, and you have to be ready for it. From an emotional perspective, Klal Yisrael needed to assume the correct mindset for the task ahead: boldness of heart and confidence of success. So they had to be strong, and they had to be confident, and they couldn't be rattled. We know that before the Jewish people went to war, in Parshas Shoftim, the Torah tells us, before they go to war, the Kohen makes an announcement. And the announcement is, "Here, Yisrael, you are today drawing near to battle against your enemies. Do not let your heart soften. Do not fear." He tells them, you got to be strong. Because once you start getting scared, that's going to be the undoing of everything in this war. That's going to be the undoing of the army. Says the Shem Yishmuel, the same way in a physical battle, in a physical war, it's very clear you need strength and confidence. In the battle, in a spiritual battle, you also need that. The Jewish people going to the desert were going to be having a battle, a war against the forces of evil. And in order for them to be able to succeed, they needed to feel certain of their calling, that they would not abandon their mission despite whatever obstacles lay ahead. This demanded a great degree of self-esteem to ensure that whatever failures were encountered, the nation would always remain certain of the value of their mission. That's what they needed. You know, if you think about it, this is what we all need. This is what we all need in the battle of the Yetzirah. We need to have the self-esteem to say that we're confident of what we're doing, we're confident of our mission, and we're confident that we can have success. And that even if, let's say, it comes out that we fail, we pick ourselves up because we know that we can still succeed. The Shema Shmuel then brings out a famous Mishnah in Kedushin. The Mishnah in Kedushin says that a person should always look at themselves as half innocent and half guilty, and that the world is half innocent and half guilty. So if you do a mitzvah, you tip yourself and the world to the side of merit. Do something wrong, you potentially tip yourself and the world to demerit. Says the Shem Yishmuel that this is a very important principle in Yiddishkeit. And that principle is that every act that we do means something. When the Mishnah says, look at yourself always like you're half and half, and that the world is half and half, and anything that you do makes a difference, that's a message that Yiddishkeit is saying, that everything you do makes a difference. Don't look at yourself as inconsequential, as valueless. The Mishnah is saying every person has looked themselves that way, as if they're half and half, and as the world is half and half, and you're actually making all the difference. That's the way that the Mishnah is saying that everything that you do has meaning and has value. And when a person understands that, that gives them the self-esteem and the confidence to battle forward and to push forward. And therefore, this is what the Jewish people needed. They needed this very high self-esteem to be able to conquer the desert in the spiritual war against the powers of evil. What gave the Jewish people this self-esteem? What gave them that encouragement? What gave them that message that they can be confident, that they can be successful, that everything they do has value and has potential? What gave them that, how Hashem gave that message to them? By the fact that he counted them. If you're counted, that means that you mean something. If Hashem wants to count each individual and counts them by name, that means everybody counts. That means I'm worthy of being counted. Hashem says, I have value, I mean something. Well, if Hashem says, I have value, I mean something, then I have that confidence to be able to move forward. I have that confidence to succeed. I have that confidence that says that even if I slip, I can pick myself up and I can move forward. So the Shem Yishmuel is saying that the purpose of all this counting was to constantly remind the Jewish people that Hashem says you have value, that you have meaning, that you have potential, that whatever you do makes a difference, and that would be what would help them get through the battle with Samuel, with the battle with the powers of evil in the desert. It was a big battle, it was an important battle, it was a difficult battle, but it was the emotional strength that they needed was that idea of strength, boldness, and confidence, and self-esteem. What gave it to them? The fact that Hashem counted them, that Hashem said, you have value.
I'm just trying to reconcile it with the prohibition against counting. In fact, the famous case...
So the prohibition against counting is how you do the counting. But if but it doesn't mean there's no point of counting. The point is how you do the counting.
So what is the right way to do mediation? Not one, not two, not three. That's how.
Well, that's what I mean. You don't directly assign a number to a person. That's why they gave. That's why they gave the coin to be counted instead of the people. We do the not one, the not two, the not three. Halakhically, if in your mind, actually in your mind, you can do one, two, three in your mind. Just don't say it.
Mm. Yeah, okay. I just thought it's just a tradition. I didn't realize the actual halacha.
Yeah, yes.
So in the famous case, David counted people. And it was a big problem.
That was a big thing. And he actually counted, right? I mean, there's discussion. The Shema Shmuel brings us down a little bit about the fact that David's counting didn't fit into the pattern of the Jewish people's being counted. But that's a whole separate discussion of what went wrong there. So the Shem Yishmuel is saying that his approach of the purpose of counting is because counting gave the Jewish people self-esteem. It gave them that feeling of value. It gave them that confidence in their value, in their potential, in their ability to succeed. And they really needed it in the desert, because they're going through the desert. It wasn't just traveling through a desert. It was meant to be by going through the desert and living in the desert and serving Hashem in the desert. That was the means of battling the powers of evil represented by the desert, which of course would make a difference for them in all generations to come. And the fact that we know that they did sin by the golden calf, they did sin by the spies, I would say it doesn't mean they didn't succeed. It just took them longer to do. It took them longer to do. Does it mean they fully succeeded? I mean, I can't judge that. But I don't think we have to assume that because they did sin by the golden calf and they did sin by the spies, that meant that they failed. It means that generation perhaps failed. That generation couldn't come out of the desert, but the next generation would come out of the desert, making up for what their ancestors had done, and they were the ones that then were able to conquer the power of evil that the desert represented. Okay. One last point on this about the purpose of counting, and that is from the Sefornu. The Sefornu explains counting in a very interesting way. It's a very basic interpretation, but it has what lies behind it is a fascinating concept. The Sefornu says on the word Su'es Reish, count the heads, take the census, L'sadram shechnesu l'aretz miyad. The purpose was to arrange the Jewish people in a way that they could enter the land of Israel immediately. Ish al diglay, each man by his flag, which eventually they were assigned to. Bilti milchama, without war. Ela sheyipnu ha-kananim yipaneha. But rather, they would walk in and the Kananim would walk out. That was the original plan, says the Sefornu. That's the Sefornu's approach. The Sefornu's approach is the Jewish people were not supposed to be fighting a war against the Kananim. They were supposed to walk in and the Kananim were supposed to walk out, which we know there was one of the nations of the Kananim that did so, that they did leave. They did abandon, they left. They didn't fight. Ubakilkal amaraglim, but with the spies sinning, so the Jewish people were supposed to enter right away without war. And that's where they're being counted right now. It's all about arranging them to be able to enter Eretz Yisrael. But that didn't happen because of the fact that there was a sin of the spies. That delayed the Jewish people from entering. That now gave more time for the Kananim to sin. And because now they had so much more time to sin, remaining in Eretz Yisrael and sinning, that was why then was that caused the necessity to have to destroy them. In essence, the Kananim, if they would have had their chance to leave right away and would have left, there would be no reason to have to obliterate them. But because they didn't leave, because the Jewish people couldn't come in, that now gave them more time to corrupt themselves, and therefore the Sefornu was necessary to have to destroy them. And then the Sefornu, another comfort of the Sefornu I want to share with you, is the fact that the Pasuk says in Pasuk Beis that we read, that when the mitzvah is given to take the census, to count them, it's b'mispar shemos, by counting names. Meaning they were counted by names. Their names were given to Moshe, to Aaron, and those and they were counted by names. So the Sefornu has a very interesting concept about names. Now, there is a general concept that our Hebrew names, our names that are from Lashon Kodesh, from the Holy Tongue, the names that we get are actually our spiritual code. Our names really represent our essence. Our essence lies in our names. That's the code. And it says the Sefornu, if you're called by your name, if the Torah calls you by your name, then that means you deserve to be called by name. If you're not living up to your name, the Torah doesn't call you by your name. The Torah doesn't recognize you by name. If the Torah recognizes you by name, that means you are living up to what your name says about you. So it says the Sefornu, b'mispar shemos. The Sefornu is coming to explain that at this census, it says b'mispar shemos. It says count them by the number of names. Now we know that later on in Parshas Pinchas, again the Jewish people are counted. There, points out the Sefornu, it doesn't say b'mispar shemos. There's no mention of counting them by name. It goes through the names of the families. Here, Su'es Reish Kol Hadas B'nei Yisrael, count the heads of all the assembly of the Jewish people from 20 years and up, whoever goes out to the army, And they counted from 20 years and up. It goes through the tribes, the names of each families, but there's no mention of Bemispar Shemus, of counting by names, as was mentioned here. And so this is what the Sephorin was coming to explain. The Sephorin who says, Bemispar Shemus, at this point it's by a number of names, Ki haya az kol echad me'aysa hadar, because at that point, every person from that generation, nechshav b'shmai ha'mayra al tzurasir yishis. He was considered, which I understand means he lived up to his name that showed what his essential being was. Lama'alasa, to their elevated state. Therefore, why is b'mispar shemais? It's b'mispar shemais because every person was on a level that they lived up to what their name said about them. Again, in the sense of excellence, in the sense of elevated level. That didn't happen for the generation entering the land. And therefore they weren't counted by name. The only thing mentioned were the names of the families, umispar ha'ishim, and the number of the people. The point is that each person was counted by name here, because before anything went wrong, before the sin of the gold of the sin of the spies, each one of them was worthy of their name. Each one of them was worthy of entering the land of Eretz Yisrael. But then they sinned by the spies. They weren't worthy of entering Eretz Yisrael. And the next generation would enter Eretz Yisrael. But they wouldn't be counted by name, because they actually didn't live up to that. They weren't on that level. Although they would be the ones to enter Eretz Yisrael, they were not at the same level as their ancestors before the sin of the spies. Their ancestors, who were meant, as the Sephorin says, to walk into Eretz Yisrael, just walk in and everybody else was going to walk out. And no one was going to be affected by that. No one's going to have to lose their lives or be affected by that whatsoever. Those were people who lived up to their names. Their names are what express their true inner essence, the true level of what they're supposed to be. Like we said before, a name, the Hebrew name that we have, is really the code, is really the expression of what our true essence is. And the Jewish people were counted by name because they lived up to that. And because they lived up to that, they should have entered Eretz Yisrael without having to raise a pinky. But that was all before the sin of the golden of the spies. The spies messed that all up. The next generation came in, but they weren't counted by name because they didn't live up to that level.
Well, except it seems to be a redundant explanation. On one hand, he says that they needed to be fought because they sinned much more and therefore they need to be killed off. And now it's another explanation of the same thing. Do you see what I'm saying?
No, because that thing that he said they had to be killed off is on the Canaan.
That's what I'm saying. But that explanation would have sufficed why they didn't leave. And here is another explanation why they didn't leave. So the Canaan.
Why? You mean because they weren't worthy of it?
Well, the one explanation is that because of the generation passed, the Canaans became much worse, and therefore they didn't leave because they needed to be killed off.
Okay. And now?
And now we have another explanation why they didn't leave, because the Jewish generation was not as on a high enough level, and therefore they wouldn't leave. What we just said.
Okay, I have to think about that.
Okay.
But that's an interesting point. Okay. So, just to sum it up, the Rashi tells us the point of counting was, counting is a expression of love. We went to the Shem Shmuel, who said that counting was an expression of value. And they needed to have that, and that value gave them the self-esteem to be able to deal with the battles of the desert. And the Sefornu says that counting was pretty basic. They're supposed to enter Eretz Yisrael now. Each tribe was supposed to have their own flag, take over their own piece of land. And therefore, the point of counting was really all about arranging everyone to be ready to enter the land. It didn't happen because of the sin of the spies, but at this point, they're just supposed to go in, take it over, and therefore, in order to do that in an orderly manner, they had to be counted and arranged properly. Now, if we turn a few pages, and we go to page 732. 732? 732. Perek Beis Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe v'al Aaron leimar. Hashem spoke to Moshe and to Aaron, saying, Ish al diglai, a man by his banner, ba'aisais, according to the signs, lebeis avaisam, to the house of their fathers, yacharu b'nei Yisrael, shall the b'nei Yisrael encamp, mineged sevel oil mayed yachanu, opposite, all around, the Mishkan shall they encamp. So the Jewish people, we know, were arranged in the desert by camps. There were four camps of the Jewish people, three tribes per camp. Each camp had a flag, had a banner. And Rashi tells us about these oises, the signs of the banner, called Egel Yeloi Ois. Every banner would have a sign. Matza Mapa Tzvuat Pliyabai. A colored banner would be hanging. Tzivay Shalzeh like a Tzivay Shalzeh. Each one's color wouldn't be like the other. Tziva kol echad kegavana avno yakvua b'chayshin. The color of each one followed the color of the stone that had their name inscribed upon it in the choshen, in the breastplate that Aaron wore. The Kohen Gadol wore a breastplate. There were 12 stones. Each stone had inscribed in it a name of a tribe. And the color of that stone became the color of each tribe's flag.
But I thought you said each camp has a flag.
Well, the pasuk says, "Ish al diglai, each man by his flag, shall they encamp." Okay. It seems to me that each camp, the four camps had a flag, and that each tribe also had a flag. I think that's the way it worked. Even though the Pesukim don't necessarily say that, but I'm looking at Rashi, it's like the camps had a flag, and each tribe had a flag.
Do we refer to the camps as units in any other context, or is it...
What do you mean?
I mean, like that's the flag of a particular camp. I've never heard of that sort of that combination. You know, would you say that's the flag of the North Camp, or that's never sort of heard of the camps as a unit in the way that sort of I was surprised.
I mean, the Pesukim, this whole parsha divides them into four camps.
Okay.
You know, so you know there were that they seem to be they we know they divide into tribes, but there were four camps. I mean, that's how the Pesukim divide them up. Now, there's lots of discussion about what exactly is the point of this flag business. You know, what with the Torah is making a fuss, everybody has a flag. What exactly is the meaning behind these flags? So again, I want to share with you from the Shem Yishmol how he explains the point of the flags. Now he starts off with a Medrash. The Medrash says that when Hashem came down on Har Sinai, He came down with an entourage of angels. And there were 22 myriads of angels. A myriad, I believe, is 10,000. So it's 22 10,000s of angels that came down. And they were all arranged in the Golem. They were all arranged by flags or separate camps. And when Klal Yisrael saw their flags, Klal Yisrael, that's the wording used that he saw they had flags, which means they were designated into different groups. And when Klal Yisrael saw their flags, they wanted the same thing. They also desired the flags. And they said,
flags of the angels, they wanted flags.
They wanted to be like the angels. When they saw the angels and their flags and their encampments, they wanted the same thing. And they said, if only we could be made into the golem like them. And Hashem said, you know, you will. You will. So according to the Medrash, this is a response to the Jewish people's desire to have such a thing. They saw it by the angels, again in a spiritual sense. They saw it in the angels. In that realm of creation of the angels, they saw in them, they saw this concept of the golem, of having camps and having separate camps with a designation. And they wanted that too. They want to be like the angels. And Hashem said, good, I'll give you that. Okay, so now what's the meaning of that? What exactly does it mean? What do the flags mean by the angels? And what does it mean that they desired so much? So the first explanation that Shem Yishmuel gives is that the function of a flag, the function of a banner, is to rally the members of a specific group. When the banner is raised, that means this banner says this group of people should come together for a purpose. Okay, a banner helps during battle. That if after battle people are scattered and they see the banner, they know where to go back to home base. So a flag is something that rallies a particular group together for a purpose. There is a pasuk in Shir Hashirim, Digloi Alai Ahava, and his dego and his banner upon me was love. So the way that the Shem Yishmuel explains based on this pasuk is that just like a banner, in a physical sense, brings people together, there's a spiritual concept of a flag bringing together also. And as the pasuk says, Digloi Alai Ahava, his degel, his flag upon me was love. Which means in a spiritual sense, what does a banner, what does a flag represent? It represents love. It represents the loving relationship between Hashem and the it represents a strong loving relationship, which I understand that as is that, like you said before, a flag rallies a group together. In a spiritual sense, the spiritual concept of a flag is that there is a love between two things, and that love is what brings them together. It rallies them together. Perhaps what this means is similar to, like, let's say a person is kind of strained. A person can't find themselves, right? But it's the love of a parent, of a spouse, of someone that brings them together, brings them back. So you can have someone straying, but it's love that brings them back together. It's love that rallies them together. The concept of flag in a spiritual sense is that it rallies two things together. It rallies them together in love. That's based on that pasuk in Shir Hashirim. A physical flag rallies together people for a purpose. The concept of a spiritual flag is it rallies together in a loving relationship. That is what the Jewish people saw by the angels. When the angels had flags, the flags represented that very strong loving relationship that the angels have with Hashem. When the Jewish people saw that, they said, we want the same thing. We also want to be able to have that kind of relationship that a flag in a spiritual sense represents. So they were given the physical flags because you need some kind of physical entity to relate to. But within that, but through that physical entity of a flag and encampments, that was really meant for them to see themselves like the angels and to rally together and come together with the Ribbono Shel Olam in love. Because the rallying call of a flag in a spiritual sense is the connection of love between Hashem and the angels and Hashem and the Jewish people. So what they saw in the angels was this strong connection of love, and that's what they wanted. That's one explanation that the Shem Yishmuel gives. The other explanation he gives is like this, and that is that he gives a very interesting explanation to what angels, or what some angels at least, do. The word malach that we use for angel, what does the word actually mean? What does the word malach actually mean? It means messenger. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim. Right? A Malach is a messenger. Malach has, Hashem gives a Malach a job. And that's what he's there for, to do the job. So says Hashem Yishmuel that one of the specific jobs, one of the specific roles that he says some angels play is like this. Everything in our physical world really starts off in a higher, at a higher spiritual root, at a higher spiritual source. And there's an influence and a spiritual emanation that starts in a higher source, and it makes its way down until it becomes a physical entity. That's how it works. Everything down here is really, so to speak, the end of the chain, the end of an influence, the end of an emanation that starts in a spiritual in a spiritual source and makes its way down until it takes on a physical body, takes on a physical manifestation in the physical world. Well, you know, the spiritual world and the physical world are so different that something has to be able to take that spiritual influence and transform it into something physical. He compares it to like electricity, right? A transformer, right? There's a surge of electricity. It's too much to handle, right? If it just comes into the house, boom, right? It's too much to handle. Can't handle it. So the transformer basically pares it down so that it can be consumed by the regular consumer. The spiritual influence comes down in such a strong manner that really the physical world can't contain it. It can't hold it. It can't grasp it. So the job of some angels, says the Shem Yishmuel, is to actually take that spiritual influence and transform it so that now it can be received in the physical world. That is what an angel does. That's what some angels do.
Rabbi, was it in page 732 and 733, it lists what each flag was.
Right, okay.
A wolf.
Okay.
It said what Yehuda Reuben was red, with Dudanium.
Okay, good.
Simon was green with Levi was black with Reuben was.
Okay, yes, I speak to finish. I need to finish this thought before I run out of time. But right. Thank you. So now, when the Jewish people saw the angels, says Hashem Yishmuel, they saw the camps. They saw the flags. They saw the camps, which means they saw the different angels with their different functions. He says some of them were transformative angels. He says other messengers of din, strict judgment, other messengers of rachm, divine mercy. But the point is that they looked at the angels and they saw that the angels transform. They, in order for us to be able to receive something from the higher worlds, higher spiritual worlds, the angels have to transform it so that we should be able to receive it. But the angels have a direct relationship with Hashem. Meaning they're transforming the influences for us. But at some level, they're getting it direct from Hashem. They're getting it direct from Hashem and then transforming it for us. Bnei Yisrael want to be like the angels. They want it direct from Hashem. They just like the angels receive direct from Hashem, that's what they wanted. That's what they yearned. They yearned for that kind of connection with Hashem that they don't need something to transform Hashem's spiritual influence to them. They wanted to be able to get it straight from Hashem just like the angels do, at least at some level. And the Rebbe Shlomo said, okay, I give you flags. You can be like the angels. You can have that function in which you don't need something to transform my influences for you. You can have it directly from me. I mean, there is a concept, right, that the Jewish people as a nation, all nations have their oath, have an angel, while the Jewish people don't have an angel. They get things directly from Hashem. So the idea of the flags, and in this sense, says the Shem Yishmuel, when the Pasuk says, his flag upon me was love, according to this, what this means is Hashem is saying that the flag of the Jewish people was an expression of the Jewish people's love, in the sense that not that a flag is in itself an expression of love, but the flags became the Jewish people's expression of love. Because the flags that you saw by the angel said, we want a direct connection with you, Hashem. We don't want it. We don't want to have to come onto angels to transform things for us. We want to be able to have a direct relationship with you. And therefore, the idea of the flags was really a representation of the Jewish people's yearnings of closeness to Hashem. So according to this explanation, the point of the flags were that was the flags were how the were the different encampments of the angels. That means that's how the Jewish people saw that the angels, each one had their job. Each one had their job of and of transforming the influences to this world. And that's what the and the flags represented encampments, and all the different angels with their different functions of doing so. But the point was is that the Jewish people saw that the angels received the influence directly from Hashem without that kind of transformation. They had that direct connection, and that's what they wanted. They wanted that direct connection with their Rabbeinu Shlomo. One last quick thought, and this comes from a different angle. Yaakov Kamenetsky asked, how come it took so long for the Jewish people to be given flags? Why couldn't they get the flags right away? Why it take so long? Even if you look like the Medrash says, they saw it by Matan Torah. But this is almost a year. It's almost a year after Matan Torah. So why did Hashem only give them the flags later? So Yaakov says that the explanation is because, being that the flags are a sign of the uniqueness of each tribe, it represents how each tribe has its own unique character and mission. In essence, as much that could actually create rivalry. That could create that could create a lack of unity, because everybody sees themselves differently. Once the Mishkan was set up, set up, then that means that now the Jewish people all have a focal point. They all encamp around the Mishkan. They're all focused on the Mishkan. They've got something within their midst for everyone to rally around. The Mishkan says that all of them together, each one in their own unique way, with their own unique and special talents and characteristics and mission, they're all doing that as part of being part of the camp of Hashem. So once they had that thing to rally around together, then there was no more worry that the flags would cause period, would cause disunity. On its own, it could. But once those flags are encamped around the Mishkan, which means now everyone is focused on the Mishkan and serving Hashem, now they understood that all their different talents and different missions were all different sections, different soldiers, different battalions of how to serve Hashem. But they needed to have that physical rallying point in order to make sure that the differences didn't turn into discord.
Thank you.